Today on Maine Calling, the race for the White House. On so many levels, this presidential election was already unusual. A president running against his predecessor, the two major party candidates, the oldest in history. An early television debate that threw the race into chaos as President Biden repeatedly stumbled and appeared to lose his place, and former President Trump told several verifiable lies. Then, on Saturday, came the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. And this morning, there is breaking news that the Florida judge has thrown out the classified documents case against Trump. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we turn to political experts for analysis about how all of this affects the race for the White House. This as the Republican convention kicks off in Milwaukee. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downeys communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Will the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump affect the November election? Today, we'll discuss that and other continuing developments, including questions about President Biden's fitness to serve another term and the news out of Florida today in the Trump classified documents case. Joining me to share their perspective on the race, Ron Schmidt, a professor of political science and the department head at the University of Southern Maine, and Gene Cummings, the former deputy chief at the Wall Street Journal's Washington Bureau. We invite you to join the conversation. What have you been talking about all weekend? What are you thinking about when you think about the presidential race? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And just a note here, NPR live coverage of the Republican convention begins at 9 p.m. this evening. Welcome to both of you. Welcome back to both of you, Gene and Ron. And, you know, we had scheduled this program several days ago because it was the beginning of the Republican convention, having no idea that we would be talking about the events that unfolded over the weekend and then again this morning. And before I ask you all about their impact on the presidential race, I want to have a moment of perspective here that, you know, people are dead, other people are injured, and many people traumatized by yet another shooting and place where people gathered in America. And I just want to express my sincere condolences for the victims in the shooting on Saturday. That said, we've gathered to talk about the presidential race. Some have said, boy, things are looking good for former President Trump. He survives an assassination attempt, and now this morning a judge throws out a big case against him. Others might say, well, it took the attention away from President Biden. He's not answering questions about his age today. Gene, what are you thinking about as all these events are unfolding?
Well, I do think that a little of both of what you described are happening. It's possible we could be at an inflection point, although I kind of doubt it. I think everyone is so dug in. I think people are, you know, a majority are thankful that the former president didn't suffer greater harm in that attack, because that's just would be nothing short of a complete tragedy. But that being said, it may harden his support base, but I don't know that it's necessarily going to move anybody, because our politics are so entrenched. Now, Trump is promising a different kind of speech this week at the convention. I'm curious about What will that be? He's, been known in the past to put on different personas, from one debate performance to another. And so it's possible he'll offer something that is surprising and might gain a lot of attention and cause people to rethink. But we got to see it. And we have no idea what he's actually going to deliver.
Ron, I'm going to turn to you. I'm going to kind of reframe the question for you, though. How would you have answered the question on Friday, and how are you answering it today in terms of where we are in the presidential race?
One thing that would be consistent if we were talking on Friday or today is that for the average American likely voter, I think it's very early. And so the vast majority, Gene's exactly right, the vast majority of American likely voters are partisan, and they've made their choices already, and they're unlikely to switch their support for a particular candidate. And to those who don't pay very close attention, it's months until the election. And so it's unlikely we're going to see anything really decisive happen at this point. The assassination attempt, while traumatic and obviously very problematic for the nation as a whole, I think is also not necessarily going to push us in one direction or the other. A lot depends on how the former president deals with this moment and how his party does. Everyone's going to be paying more attention to the GOP this week because of the convention. So we'll get a chance to see how they perform under these circumstances. This probably will, I think, provide more energy to Trump's base, but that hasn't really been a question or a problem. He's generally pretty good at riling up his supporters. So it's important that we take the assassination attempt seriously as a sign of the dangers of the violence of our politics and our political language right now. But I don't know that it's going to be decisive in terms of what happens in November.
And Jean, let's talk about the language. What we've seen from both President Biden and former President Trump is a call for unity after this. What do you make of that?
Well, of course, that's what they're calling for. But I mean, if we look at politics recently, on January 6th, people died. At this rally, people died. This is a terrible, terrible path that we are on. And, uniting the country is take will take extreme efforts and consistent efforts on the part of leaders of both parties to unite the country. And I don't know that we have seen the former president consistent on that front. And it's very important that the message of today, with both of them saying the country should unite, that would need to be sustained. Personally, I don't think it will be sustained. I just think the country at the moment is on a really, really treacherous path. I don't know what knocks us off it, though.
Ron.
Yeah, I agree with Jean. I think that, I mean, unity is a broad word. It can have a lot of different significances. If you think after 9/11, the members of Congress coming together for these big public events of shared sympathy, I don't see anything like that happening right now. But unity could also mean just a certain basic agreement that despite the very real differences of our policy that members of different parties have, that we not resort to homicide, that we that this level of violence is negative. And even there, I can be surprised, God knows. But I don't think that's very likely right now.
I want to point out that this program is live at 11 o'clock in the morning, but does rebroadcast. So if you are listening to the rebroadcast, this question may have been answered by the time you are listening. Donald Trump says that he will name his vice presidential candidate today. As we said, coverage starts at 9 o'clock. Maybe he'll wait for the evening to say who it will be. Gene, what's at stake? How as important is Donald Trump's vice presidential nominee?
It's important, as with all these big decisions that they have to make, because the margins are so close. And it is possible to select a vice presidential candidate who could sway maybe a small number of people. Typically, the vice president doesn't have a big impact on the results. But because our margins have been so close over the last couple of cycles, a small movement could make a big difference. So if you look at someone like one of the candidates, J.D. Vance from Ohio, Ohio's not in jeopardy, but it could make it a much easier for Trump to spend time elsewhere, because for the Republican candidate, Ohio is a must-win state. So it's important in that respect. So, you know, we will see there's, you know, there the margins in Michigan, Pennsylvania, you know, Nevada, they were so close that if you can move 2%, that could be the difference in a given state.
Ron, what would you like to add to that? What is on the line as Donald Trump chooses his vice presidential running mate?
It's true that the vice presidential choices don't play a big part in electoral outcomes, and the role they play may be lessening. It's hard to compare exactly different historical eras, but the days when, like, when JFK would add LBJ on the assumption that this will help him win a chunk of the South, we haven't seen a VP choice like that in quite a while. But as Gene points out, with the level of partisanship in the country, the margin of victory is so tiny now that even the few points that could be associated with the right, quote unquote, or the wrong choice of a VP candidate could be decisive.
Just a few days ago, the discussion. Go ahead, Gene. Yeah.
I just thought I'd add the other importance to this decision is the age of both of the candidates, that whoever is chosen for VP, we already have got attention is being turned towards Kamala Harris because of Biden's issues. The same thing will take place on the other side because Trump is also old. And he also has a tendency to ramble and go off script and raising questions about his own acuity. So I think that whoever is chosen will face a bit more scrutiny because of the age of the person at the top of the ticket.
All right. Well, Gene, I'm glad you brought up age because the conversation, of course, the big conversation all of last week, and what we kind of assume we'd be talking about today is will President Biden be the nominee for the Democratic Party? Some people, very famous people, James Carville have said, no, he won't be. And Democrats need to coalesce around somebody else. What do you think, Gene?
I see no signs that he's going to step away. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I've covered him for a long time. He tends to be very stubborn, and he seems dug in. And I think what has surprised me is the recent polls show no change. And so we have this sort of 47-46 kind of race going on, and the debate people thought would kind of tank him in the polls, and it so far it hasn't. And so if you're Joe Biden and you look at that and you say, you know, why should I get out? So I just don't anticipate him doing so, although really, you know, plenty of very smart political folks say, you know, he'll be gone in a week. I think if he was going to be gone in a week, we would see signs of it. But so far, I've seen the opposite, where he's getting out more. I mean, three events this week during the Republican convention is not typical. Typically, each party goes a little quiet during the convention for the other party. But he's putting himself out there, even going, on air last night. He seems full in and then some to me.
Ron, what do you think?
I'm always telling my students about how we talk about political parties as though they are ideological movements when they're actually big coalitions, mega coalitions even of smaller ones. What Biden did in 2019 and 2020 of garnering enough support across all the very different groups within the Democratic Party to win the nomination was impressive, and he's doing that again now. And it's very difficult. I think there seems to be this image you can just sort of swap out the guy at the top of the ticket, like removing a device from a machine and replacing it with something else. And to replace Biden, I think now would be all but impossible. There's a possible scenario if he wanted to resign and give the nod to the vice president. But I never found the idea that he would step away and then smoothly be replaced to be very likely in the first place.
I'm going to go to a caller. Frederick is calling from Bath. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jennifer and guests. I wanted to share that I have a prediction to make, which is similar to the one that I made 2 years ago. And that is, I see a blue wave happening. And that is because this conversation about Biden resigning, I think, is a coastal discussion. I've spent 35 years in Pennsylvania and many winters in Arizona and Maricopa County. And I'll tell you what, the city of Pittsburgh, my hometown where the assassination attempt happened, and Maricopa County, which is the swath of most of Arizona's vote, is not going to regress and go to the right and follow this Trump model of anger and divisiveness.
Frederick, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that perspective. Jean, thoughts?
Well, it's possible. I think we don't have many wave elections anymore because of how divided we are. But if you look at the way I look at this cycle, with no change at the top, same two candidates, pretty much the same issues except for abortion. That is one big hot new issue that's out there. This is going to be a turnout, this grassroots turnout election. Whoever shows up is going to win. And it's not persuasive, it's getting them out. And so who has the better ground game? And I don't know that we know that yet. I think there'll be a lot more reporting in this area after the conventions, when the parties are really getting revved up and organized in that way. But if you look at some of these abortion referendums, the Democrats have already been out there, touching voters, collecting signatures, which is warm up for them. And then you look on the other side, the Republicans in Michigan, for instance, are, conducting a civil war. And that state party is supposed to be responsible for running the grassroots operation. They can't settle on a chairman. So these things may look separate, but when you put it in the fabric of a national presidential campaign, any kind of show of strength or weakness in elections this close can turn out to be pivotal. And so, like I said, I wouldn't predict a blue wave or a red wave. I think we'll have a really close election, but I think it's gonna the grassroots get out the vote is going to be the decisive factor in however the race turns out.
And Ron, I think what Frederick was referring to, he's gone now. that when he said 2 years ago, he's talking about our own race for governor, I suspect, when many people thought it would be very close, and that was not the case when Governor Mills and former Governor LePage were running against each other. Are there lessons? Are there any parallels, or not really?
I don't know. In except insofar as I didn't study the ground game, I have to say, in that race. So it's hard for me to say, because I think Gene is right. I think this is going to be one of those races that really comes down to who shows up in the larger numbers. And there are questions for me in regard to both campaigns. The Democrats have just now finished an attack upon themselves and their leading candidate. And in the GOP, Laura Trump is in a very important position at the RNC, and the Trump campaign has talked about having more donations moving expressly through them. And so the question about how campaign monies are going to be spent and exactly how this is going to be translated into ground game is still very much up in the air.
All right. Well, we do need to take a break. We are talking about the presidential race on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the presidential campaign. My guest, Ron Schmidt, department head and professor of political science at USM, and former Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau Deputy Chief Gene Cummings. Join the conversation. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. A quick email, please. A comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, Andrew Rudalevich, who is the Thomas Brackett Reed Professor of Government at Bowdoin College. He studies political institutions with an emphasis on the American presidency, and his most recent book is By Executive Order, Bureaucratic Management and the Limits of Presidential Power. Thanks so much for calling in, Andy.
Great to be with you.
So what is your initial reaction to the attempt on former President Trump's life on Saturday?
Well, dismay, I guess, was the initial reaction. And, the usual sadness, I guess, when we see our private hatred spill over into public life. And as you said at the top of the hour, we do, need to remember that one person was murdered, others are critically injured. And so we are very glad Mr. Trump wasn't hurt worse than he was, but still a very bad night. I have to say my first thought was not necessarily about the horse race in the presidency, but I can see why thoughts have turned to that so quickly.
And let me ask you, if you think at this point one of the candidates has the edge, somebody has the edge in the Electoral College?
Well, I mean, it remains a very close race. I think the working assumption all along has been that we'd have close to a rerun of 2020. But of course, that too was very close in a lot of key states. I do think that the polling in 2020 had the President Biden ahead pretty consistently from 2019 on, right? Even the very crazy events of 2020 didn't affect the stability of that race very much. This time around, the stability has been in the other direction. Former President Trump's support has stayed pretty much exactly where it's always been. And then President Biden's support has dropped off. Various lack of enthusiasm from young voters, from the left of his party, et cetera. And now, of course, post-debate, a broader sort of malaise. So I do think the edge is probably with the Republicans at this point. But that said, there's a lot of time. And as Gene mentioned, the polling has not shifted as dramatically as one might have expected. The, attitudes are pretty well baked in. And so it is going to really matter how the campaign proceeds from here.
All right. And Professor, I want to ask you, because this is something I know you study carefully, how recent Supreme Court decisions affect this race and the presidency?
Well, I think they affect the presidency more than the race itself. Two of the very prominent Supreme Court decisions of this term involved, of course, presidential immunity, where the court was extremely generous in its interpretation of how the separation of powers, in their view, protected the presidency from criminal prosecution. And then a more wonky decision that dealt with regulation and whether or not judges should give deference to bureaucratic expertise when those bureaucracies make regulation, that is to say, environmental regulation or workplace protections, so on and so on. There's a smaller case, too, where they made it easier for those who are regulated to sue the regulators. So in all, you know, there's a strengthening of the presidency as an institution, perhaps a weakening of the president's ability to make policy through the bureaucracy, at least without judicial supervision. What these cases have in common is a sort of elevation of the judicial power, which I'm not sure is a very healthy development.
And finally, let's talk about President Biden. Many leading Democrats are asking him to step away and not be the nominee. What do you make of that?
Well, I'd be surprised if he was inclined to listen to them, I guess, is my answer. You know, I do think there are legitimate worries, right, about the ability of, you know, anyone in their 80s to carry out an additional four-year term in a very high-pressured job. That said, you know, the risks are quite real of replacing and not replacing. The Democrats are in a real dilemma here. I do think it's likely, you know, I know there's been some sort of, I won't say fantasy, sort of talk about an open convention where all the candidates would get together and debate and where would be sort of a consensus outcome. You know, I think if it's the case that President Biden does step aside, the nominee will be Vice President Harris. And so that's, I think, the odds that need to be calculated within the party, both in terms of the election, but in terms of governance.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Andrew Rudalevich, professor of government at Bowdoin College. We'll go to Richard, who's calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Hey, this is a great conversation. I would like to point out one thing that I've not heard espoused much. The presidency is a lot more than just one person. Biden has an agenda and he has an administration. And that administration has been carrying out his agenda perfectly for the last few years. He's still able to, you know, work with Congress, I think, to you know, get his agenda done. And as he keeps saying, he's not finished yet. So I would like to remind people of that. I think he's still able to lead his administration, you know, despite his age. I'm 72. I'm starting to feel a little out there, but you know, we're still capable as we get older. And the thing that scares me is the kind of administration that Trump might put in place if he becomes president. He said that he would be replacing most of the civil servants in government who do the daily work of administering the government.
Richard, thank you for your call. I want to turn to Ron. And Ron, what about this, you know, point of Richard's that you're not just electing the president, you're electing his entire administration?
Richard's exactly right. And that does tend to get lost. We tend to forget how much of the executive branch is a long way away from the West Wing, or even from the White House as a whole. The Biden administration does have a record that you can examine and study. And they have accomplished a lot of the things that candidate Biden said he wanted to accomplish. And the presidential job also includes a lot of different things. Joe Biden is clearly a lot better at persuading legislators, for example, than he is at the sort of charismatic speech giving aspect of the presidency. And the Trump administration is coming in with a very explicit, if terribly long, plan of sort of advocated programs and even political philosophy. And we can look back to his previous term for a sense of that. So that's, I think Richard is reminding us of a very important focus to keep in mind as we get closer to Election Day.
Gene, what I'm wondering as we hear this, and we know that it's logical that we're electing an entire administration with policies and people with a lot of experience throughout the cabinet and beyond. The way that, at least in my lifetime, the presidential race has been framed in terms of who do you want to take that 3 a.m. phone call? And you know, people are more likely, in my understanding, to vote on that sort of gut feeling than they are something logical.
Well, that's very true. You make an excellent point, Jen. Both parties go through a lot of trouble to sort of lay out an agenda and establish what their legislative priorities would be if elected. But voters do. They go on instinct. They go with their gut. And, you know, we'll see what kind of assessment they will make. I very much agree with Ron that we're really early. And there, as we learned this week, things change unexpectedly. And we have many weeks before voters are going to get fully engaged and start analyzing and assessing the two candidates. So, but you make an excellent point, Jen. Voting is kind of a gut check, and it's less about a full analysis of the policies that have been promoted by each party.
Richard, thank you so much for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll go to an email next. This is from Greg. Greg writes, unfortunately, this morning's ruling by Judge Cannon regarding the Trump documents case will only solidify the belief for at least half the country that there is a captured MAGA judiciary from lower to Supreme Court. The notion of, well, isn't it nice to own your judges? So, Greg, thank you for that. And Ron, how does the public's view of the judiciary affect the presidential race, if at all?
It's variable. I mean, we saw in a number of different races around the country the enormous effect, the impact of the Dobbs decision coming out of the court and the dismantling of Roe v. Wade. And the Supreme Court's popularity with the public, I think, has only become more tattered since that decision. Whether or not that becomes one of the top two or three issues that motivate voters in this election, we're going to find out later. But since presidents nominate justices, that's usually at least an important theme. The decision that Judge Cannon made this morning, like other decisions she's made, was, if not entirely unprecedented, then not very closely documented. Going back to Watergate, at least, the court has tended to disagree with her reading of the independent prosecutor statute. But the degree to which that plays a part in what voters remember, I think, is up for grabs. It might more motivate people who already doubt the legitimacy of the court without really convincing those who support Trump.
And Lisa on Facebook agrees. She says, abortion isn't the only issue. I believe SCOTUS's recent decisions are another issue for this election, especially immunity is a great concern for many voters. Jean, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think Biden is going to try to make the Supreme Court an issue in the campaign. Trump did that very effectively in 2016. And I think Biden's going to play that card this time around, primarily because of overturning Roe v. Wade and the age of some of the justices. Kind of an irony, but yes. But I know he was quoted at one event saying he thinks the next president is going to have a couple of judicial Supreme Court appointments. So I think he's gearing up to make it an issue. As for Judge Cannon, for those of us who've watched that case very carefully, she's been trying to wiggle out of this since day one. And so she found a technicality and got it off her plate. That'll be appealed to the higher courts. And we'll see if they agree with her. As Ron said, they've come down hard on her in the past for some of her other rulings. So it may wind up back on her docket. But now it's going to take, you know, a year, because if the Justice Department wins on their initial appeals, Trump will take it back to the Supreme Court.
We're talking about the presidential race. We are going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, we welcome you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can get in an email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing the race for the White House. Joining me, Gene Cummings, former Washington Bureau Deputy Chief at the Wall Street Journal and University of Southern Maine Political Science Professor and Department Head, Ron Schmidt. You can share your comments and questions if you're quick. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Find us on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Ron, the reason we're doing this program today as opposed to another day is because it's the start of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, which is a Democratic city as far as I've read. And I'm wondering what the significance of the convention is this year.
Well, you know, the Democrats were going to be in Milwaukee back in 2020. Wisconsin is a swing state. It's very, very important electoral territory, and it's purple. Milwaukee is a Democratic city, but there are parts of the state that are very solidly pro-Trump. In regard to the convention, I mean, one of the things that conventions traditionally do is to remind partisan voters, this is what we're supporting, this is what we're about in this election. And with the familiarity of this candidate and with his connection with the base, that work is pretty much already done. Conventions are also, like for any profession, a way for people to come together and work together and make connections and try to build out their networks and try to plan and to compete. And we'll be seeing some of that, but it's not going to be on the parts of the convention that air in primetime. And they also try to advertise, you know, to get out what the party is about, to reiterate their brand. Because I don't want to sound too cynical, because of the horrible things that happened, because of the assassination attempt, there's going to be attention paid, I think, to how the GOP deals with its tendency in this election to use very violent language. The former president has said he's rewriting his speech. I think people will be watching to see how he and how his party managed to stay on brand without seeming to add more fuel to the fire that blazed out so much in Pennsylvania this weekend.
Yeah, and Gene, you had mentioned that you're really going to be paying attention to Donald Trump's speech. What else from the convention are you really going to be paying attention to? What are you looking for, and what questions do you want answered?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see who becomes the vice presidential candidate, and what message do they deliver? You know, do the Republicans end up doing good cop, bad cop? Because one of the contenders, J.D. Vance, came out immediately after the attempted killing, saying it was Biden's fault, because Biden had been saying that Trump's, you know, destroying the country. I mean, that was kind of crazy when we didn't even know the name of the shooter at the time. He was really quick to come out that way. And some Republicans and others have said that should actually disqualify him. It may not. It may, in fact, put him up a notch with Trump. We just don't know how they're going to handle the messaging, given that the former president has previewed that he is changing his speech. So that's, you know, he has signaled he's coming with a different message than the ones we've heard at rallies. And I'm curious what that'll be.
An email here from Alan. It seems to me that the Project 2025 plan is an attack on our democracy. The Heritage Foundation and several Trump associates have been involved in writing the plan. Their plan is to fire the qualified civil service employees and replace them with Trump loyalists, and that will destroy the federal government's effectiveness. If you want clean air, clean water, safe air traffic, safe medicine, or any other service that the federal government provides, then Trump should not be elected. So obviously, Alan is partisan. And Ron Schmidt, I want to ask you about Project 2025, this Heritage Foundation document. The Trump team is disavowing any connection to it. What can you tell listeners who have not been following this sort of part of the conversation about Project 2025?
Yeah, the Heritage Foundation is sort of steered the composition of this document, and they've had buy-in from a number of different interest groups and political activists, the vast majority of whom have worked with either the Trump administration or the previous Trump campaigns. It is big. It's 900 and some pages. And like a lot of these documents, part of it is probably just a random wish list. And so we should take note of that at first. It's not actually a party platform, but it does have a political vision, sort of an ideology to it, which is a real step aside from any kind of mainstream American political agenda. It's very aggressively opposed to the kind of level of government activity we've assumed since at least the New Deal, if not well before. It's opposed to the more expansive reading of civil rights that we've seen since at least the 1950s. It's very hostile, basically, to a lot of things that a lot of Americans assume as part of the social contract that Americans assume to be in place. And so if it makes sense that the Biden campaign is really trying to emphasize that report and tie it closely to the Trump campaign, because it depicts a vision of what politics should do that is very much a minority view, and that in many respects would be very unpopular, I think, with the majority of voters.
We'll go to B, who's calling from J. Hi, B, go ahead.
Hi. I think it's very unfair, because before even Trump even was elected president to begin with, it was said right out that they were going to start and find all kinds of things against him. And that's all they've been doing, is finding this against him, that, making him out to be a true criminal. That man does pray, like the rest of the world does. And then the fact that the evil, it's like being an evil kingdom around here in the state of Maine, too, that you can kill any child you want to. I think that is quite immoral. Who the heck wants to have their children and grandchildren killed?
B, are you talking about what Donald Trump said during the debate, that there are governors killing babies that have been born?
I know that my governor here has been. She put it in that you could have an abortion all the way to full term. That is really immoral. I'm sorry. And I don't feel we should be using our money to pay to kill children. And I'm not saying that the whole world is that. And I know that Biden said no, but it's okay to your country and your Democrat or whoever you have to do this. This is wrong.
B, thank you so much for calling and expressing your opinion. Jean, B started her comment by talking about the fact that President Trump said very early on, before he was president, that they will be out to get me. There will be witch hunts. They will be trying to call me things that I am not. What do you make of her perspective?
Well, she's right, and it's true on the other side. That is what, you know, campaigns are about. It's not kumbaya moments, it's a battle. And the president and the former president certainly dished as much as he took with Hillary Clinton. And, you know, that is the nature of a campaign. It is a very tough competition because the stakes are so high. So, yes, both sides do that. Now, as for her remarks about abortion, I mean, even under Roe v. Wade, there were restrictions up until, you know, there were limits on when an abortion could take place, and it did not go all the way to the end of term. So there's been some twisting of that language, but, you know, I mean, it's a very emotional issue. Caller B has every right to her opinion, and you know, should feel free to speak out, because it's just a very personal issue.
B, thank you so much for taking the time to call. We're going to go to Anne, who's calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Anne, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. So, from decades of knocking on doors and doing phone banking outreach to potential voters, I have a sense that there are two very different views of what voting is, that for some people it's uniting, compromising, uniting to take power through their votes. And for other people, it's an exercise, you know, an individual exercise in personal expression. And I think we saw that in 2016, that many very conservative Republicans held their nose and voted for Trump because they wanted the Supreme Court, whereas, you know, liberal Democrats sat on their hands rather than vote for Hillary Clinton, who some of her stances they found personally repugnant. And I think there's a very strong difference in Maine, you know, from my experience, 10 years of experience in Maine itself, and I wondered what the experts thought.
Ron, I'm guessing if she were your student, Anne would get an A-plus for her analysis. But I've heard the line that Democrats want to fall in love, Republicans fall in line. Is this what Anne is saying?
I think her reading is exactly right. And I'd also like to thank her for doing that work, which is pretty thankless and very difficult. And also one of the things that the assassination attempt should remind us of is just how dangerous it has become now in America to be involved at any level of politics. People who do the work of voter outreach, even the people who take your name when you go in to vote, are at much more risk now than they've been previously. So again, thank you for doing that.
Anything you'd like to add, Jane?
No, I think that both the caller and Ron have hit the mark.
All right. Anne, thank you so much for your call. We'll go to Harmony and Fritz. Hi, Harmony. Hi, Fritz. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question on the debate. A debate is a verbal discussion, and the one who stays on subject, answers the questions, and gives the best argument wins. Why isn't this discussed? Who won? We've made it into a boxing match, see who's stronger. But I would like to know whose brain is the better brain for governing.
Yeah, it was, you know, we had a conversation after the debate with the same guests, but I guess people didn't really talk about who won or lost, Gene. What would you say to Fritz?
We talked a lot about who lost, and that was just, you know, the sort of cosmetics of the night. I mean, if you want substance, I think most analysts felt like President Biden provided more substance than President Trump did. So if you measure it by that standard, you would say Biden did better than Trump. But that's not the only standard in which a debate is measured. And it also partly is the aesthetics of it all. And in that case, Biden fell well short of expectations. So different ways to measure it, I'll grant that. And so I would say on substance, Biden did better.
Fritz, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
I think Fritz too points to a sort of secret or uncomfortable truth about debates, which is they don't tell us a lot about the governing style of presidential candidates.
Yeah. Thank you for your call. We're going to try to squeeze in one more. Glenn from Orono. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead. And if you can be quick, that'd be great.
I just think Biden's done a good job. He's done more for climate than anybody, and Trump will be a disaster for climate. But what frustrates me is we're not doing an election about the past 4 years. It's about the coming 4 years, and Biden's past his prime. The man can't speak. We need to get younger leadership in there.
Ron, this last call is reflecting what a lot of people are saying right now.
If you want to see Biden give a good speech, that he's done a lot of that work in the last week or so. The debate was very much a nadir point for him. But the last 4 years actually does tell us something about the upcoming 4 years, and the 4 years before that, too. Looking at what happened in the Trump administration and what's happened in the Biden administration is a pretty good indicator for what to expect them to do in the White House, and a better one, I think, than what happens on a debate stage.
Gene.
I totally agree. I think the the other measure of how someone's going to be president is how they run their campaign. Being the manager at the top of a huge campaign operation gives voters an indication of how they would manage the big federal government. So that's another measure.
Glenn, thanks for your call and to everyone who called this hour. And thank you to Ron Schmidt, Department Head and Professor of Political Science at the University of Southern Maine, and Gene Cummings, former Deputy Chief of the Washington Bureau at the Wall Street Journal. And a reminder, NPR coverage of the Republican National Convention begins tonight at 9. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. We are produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, water safety. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.